Hey everyone, I'm your host Richie Burke, and welcome back to the Go Getters podcast brought to you by Go Get It Marketing and Media, ggmm.io. Today I'm joined by Milwaukee Buck, NBA champ, real estate mogul, Pat Connaughton, as well as his best friend from childhood who's co-hosting it with me, second time co-hosting a Go Getters podcast, Joe Stanton, who is also his business partner in real estate at Three Leaf Development. They were in here for about an hour 20. I thought it was all great, so I've decided to chop this up into two parts. Part one will be releasing today, obviously, and part two will come out early next week. The cool thing about this was, especially with Joe co-hosting, who's Pat's best friend from childhood, is we get the inside on a lot of stories that you've never heard of before. Pat's been on a number of podcasts, but we get to go deep into some childhood stories. There's a lot of entourage like stories of being part of NBA All-Star Weekend, all the parties that ensued after the finals win, transporting the Larry O'Brien trophy from Milwaukee to Massachusetts, and what Joe had to go through to pull that off. So all of that we'll be covering on this week's episode. And then next week's episode, there's some more hilarious childhood stories. We talk baseball and real estate a little bit, and then we go into a lot of fan-submitted questions. By the way, thank you to everyone who did submit a question. I asked PC if he's single. A lot of ladies did submit that question to me, as well as a number of other good ones. So anyway, big thank you to Pat and Joe for coming on. Thank you to you for tuning in. And just a reminder, please subscribe to the Go Getters podcast if you have not already. Write a review, share with a friend. That all helps us get more ears on these episodes. Let's dive in. Pat, so how's the hand? Any updates? I think people are wondering that right now.
The hand's doing well. I mean, it's coming along a little bit slower than I would like, but patience hasn't always been my strong suit. The positive is, I said to Joe, if he has problems with anybody in the development space, I got a metal plate in for some backhand stuff. If anything were to go south, our security team said they'd need my help now. So I got a little more job opportunities in case anything goes the wrong way.
Go full mass hole on them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I like it. It's good, man. I've started shooting today. That's the breaking news. I was able to do some shooting today, 2 weeks after surgery.
Oh, nice. Even with that huge lump on the hand?
Yep. They said that'll help work through the swelling. It might cause a little bit more, but it's like a step back in swelling for a step forward in, you know, recovery.
For those who haven't seen it, it looks like he's got like a golf ball in the back of his hand right now. So it's getting better.
Legit.
But, I mean, to be shooting 2 weeks after surgery, I think it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, we got Sandro, Mamu, as we call him. Him and I got this thing going where I was like, I had surgery 14 days ago. I've been in the gym for 13 days since. So to be shooting 15 days after surgery isn't too bad.
I like it. When till you return? A few more weeks?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, if it was up to me, it'd be two more weeks. I think it'll probably be three. It'll probably be like that third week in March. They want to be cognizant. It has nothing to do with mobility. It has nothing to do with like hand strength. It's more about contact, right? So they put a metal plate in my hand. They put 8 screws in it. It'll stay in and it stabilized the bone. So the bone's in a great place to heal. It'll take probably 4 weeks for the bone to heal fully. Like I do x-rays every week. There's still a little bit of a hairline fracture, things like that. But the movement, there's no problem with it. The big thing's impact. So I can shoot, but I can't catch right now, 2 weeks out. So they have a guy standing next to me. I look like a quarterback where, you know, if the receiver standing next to me catches the ball, he hands it to me, I take a shot. It's not very efficient, but it's what needs to be done for the time being. And the only thing, like I said, holding me back is that contact. They want to be cognizant of the fact that somebody comes down on my hand, it doesn't re-break, and then I'm out for another 4 weeks, and then it goes into playoffs and things like that.
Yeah. You put on a show at the 2019 dunk contest and didn't make it to the final two. D-Wade kind of gave you a bad rating on that one dunk. Do you regret not doing it this year? That probably would have been an easy win.
Yeah. I mean, look, it wasn't for the broken hand, I may have an opportunity to do it this year, but
that's true.
That was this is the debate. Honestly, I'll open it up to you guys. The debate I've had with a few people, and I may have had it with Joe, so we may have had more experience in this debate, but would you rather be a part of a dunk contest that was considered one of the best dunk contests of all time, aka the 2019 dunk contest, the way Aaron Gordon and Derrick Jones Jr. kept doing extra dunks at the end to figure out who was going to be the champion? And I got a 50 in it. Would you rather have that? Or would you rather have won a dunk contest that was significantly less fun to watch or significantly less impressive?
I would say be involved in one of those dunk contests because I think those tend to be more memorable. Now, if you make the argument, would you rather have a championship ring when it was an easier year to win it or be involved with like, you know, the dynasty type teams, I might take the ring there because it's a ring, right?
For sure.
A little more meaningful. But yeah, I'd rather be involved in the contest you were involved in.
Yeah, look, I said the same thing. I'm biased. Joe over here, he's all about winning chips and he's all about the hardware. So Joe over here was like, look, in 10 years, is anybody going to know that it was a bad dunk contest? You're going to be a dunk contest champion for the rest of
history
life.
Books.
Yeah. 100%. So Joe wasn't too enthused with the way that it went down, but maybe we'll have a chance to right that ship in the three-point contest some year.
Maybe. We'd like to see that. Speaking of that All-Star weekend, can you tell us a little bit about that? You've got some good stories.
Oh, who? You want Joe to start or you want me to start? Co-host, why don't you?
Co-host, take it away.
I mean, it was an awesome, awesome weekend. So the fact that he got into the dunk contest, you know, first off, I mean, I know he's got hops, but was wild. I mean, we were going into the weekend. It was in Chicago, you know, major city. Knew it was going to be a blast of a time. But I think one of the crazier things for me was seeing, you know, him on that. Obviously, I've seen him on the NBA stage, but seeing him on the stage of, you know, with all the All-Stars and all the cool people that we got to meet who were coming up to him and, you know, wanted to chit-chat with him. And one of the funniest stories that I always come back to and I tell everybody about that weekend is we're driving around, like, the whole weekend and the Bucks PC's obviously in the dunk contest and then Giannis is in the game. And they basically sent their security team with us, like, everywhere we went the whole weekend. And so we had a designated Bucks security guy with us driving around every single place we went. We went out to dinner. We went out to a bar. We went out wherever. He was tagging along with us, which was pretty funny. And so this,
and Mo, don't forget Mo.
Yeah, and Mo. We had a driver too. It was a retired Chicago cop who like works private security. So that was the closest probably I'll ever get to feeling like I was like a significant political figure or significant athlete. You know, being able to drive around with Mo, have us take, you know, get in the back door everywhere we went and the whole thing. But
MVP of the Fairfield Rec Hockey League, they didn't have that treatment.
Exactly. But no, I think the funniest part of all of that, of the private security detail, had to be when we got in, anytime we got into the car, there were strict instructions from the security guy to put Pat in the back right seat of the car. This guy would drive in the passenger seat. He's like, hey, any time I need to get out of the car and I need to get to Pat, if something, you know, if shit hits the fan, I got to make sure I get to Pat and I get him out of the car. We get him to safety, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, do you think he's like the fucking president of the United States? I'm like, oh, I just thought that was the funniest thing. I'm like growing up with him, obviously from childhood, seeing him, people think of him in that manner just always makes me laugh.
I thought you were also like, what about me? I'm in the back seat. What are you going to get me?
You stick me in the back seat and I'm going to be left to be fed to the dogs. Like, what the heck?
The Fairfield hockey champ can fend for himself. That's a tough sport right there. He's all right.
We had some good ones. I mean, that weekend was a lot of fun. I think, you know, Joe and I went back to our childhood days when we'd go in my backyard. We had a basketball hoop. We'd lower the rim and we'd pretend to be, you know, Steve Blake and Juan Dixon of that Maryland All-Star team. And we'd throw down dunks and then we'd try to repeat Vince Carter dunks from the dunk contest. And so to actually take part in the dunk contest and then to have Joe and some of our closest buddies be there for that weekend, my parents, my trainer from home, my AAU coach, Coach Karate, like we had a great group with us who got to also be a part of the experience. And I kind of go back. I mean, I think this will be a theme of this entire podcast is, I don't know if anybody's ever seen Entourage, but you know, Ari Gold in the movie, who's my favorite character in the show, he has this great little dialogue where it says, you know, athletes, entertainers, actors, you know, rappers, whatever, like part of what makes it real is to have the people who you grew up with, who knew what the dream was the entire time, be around and share in those experiences. And so the dunk contest is such a unique thing. It's such a spectacle for the NBA. All-Star weekend in general, such a spectacle. I mean, there are stories like Joe, we walk into the hotel and, you know, he's got a room, my other buddy's got a room in the player's hotel, and there's security. You got to go through a metal detector every time you go in. You got to get your credentials checked every time you go in. Like, stuff of that nature that you just don't think about. You know what I mean? Like, we grew up in Arlington, Massachusetts. We grew up with no ties to pro sports, no ties to, you know, high political or high net worth individuals. We just think, you know, it's normal, right? But think about it in the other perspective. Like, Giannis, you got all of the probably most notable professional athletes in the world, I would say percentage wise, in the NBA, just because of how global it's gone, how they don't have a helmet on their head, and just the sport itself is so branding, so marketable, and you got all of them in one place. The security should be high. Like, you don't think about it. Like, we don't think about it. We go to, on the way down, we went to Cracker Barrel and got some lunch because we were starving. Like, we don't think that way because we never grew up around it. We never really experienced it until now. But it's funny, those little intricacies that you don't think about, that now when you go through the experience, it's stuff we talk about. Like, do you remember this? Do you remember the two security guys we had with us all weekend? Do you remember the security at the hotel all weekend? Do you remember what it was like after the dunk contest? Dunk contest going down on the floor. Like, there are so many little things that I think made the weekend so memorable that weren't seen by the public when you're actually performing at the dunk contest.
And I think he cares probably less about this. I care more so as, like, I got to meet, you know, obviously I've met Giannis before, but got to meet Christian Yelich because he was a part of the dunk contest with Pat. And, you know, that was a super cool experience for me, being able to meet Christian. And there was plenty of others, you know, from that weekend too. So, like you said, growing up from Arlington, Mass, and you know, not knowing anyone of that stature, it was cool to meet all those guys. And last thing I would say on that before I kick it over to you, Richie, is, speaking of Christian Yelich, do you want to give a little hint of what you were going to do with your finals dunk for the All-Star Dunk Contest?
Oh,
you want to save it for the bank for later, or what are we thinking?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I got shafted in the dunk contest, so we might have to, you know, you and I, we hold a grudge from time to time. So we're moving on to the 3-point contest. We're trying to be a part of as many different things at All-Star Weekend as we can. So, you know, I would say it's okay to give it away. That next dunk we had with Christian was with Yelly, as I call him. We have, I had a glove on. So doing a 360 dunk while catching a baseball that he threw to me from out of bounds. And there's been some leaked footage of it here and there. From the practice round that we had, but I thought it would have been cool to kind of incorporate it, you know, incorporate something that's different. I think the dunk contest nowadays, there's so many dunks that have been done. How do you find things that are slightly different? So with the jumping over Giannis, touching the backboard added a different element to it, right? And not everybody noticed that element right away, which is why I had to kind of point it out, and they showed the replay, et cetera. But including baseball, including catching a baseball with my other hand while I'm doing a 360 dunk, I thought that would have added another element and another unique factor that people hadn't seen. And it would have been cool to be able to do on that stage, but it was fun to do in practice, and it was fun to get down on like the second try.
So you got the mitt in your left hand, the ball in your right hand, you do a 360, catch it with your left hand.
Yep.
Finish it. And I did see him in practice throw it down. So it was pretty impressive. Would have been a 50.
Where's Yelich standing?
Out of bounds. So he was standing behind the backboard out of bounds. So I come from the top of the key.
Does he throw it over the backboard or slow?
He throws it just like right at me. And so was Yelly himself was phenomenal. Like, it had a little bit of a pressure on him because he had to put it in the right place for me to catch it. He did it with ease.
Just two really quick follow-up questions. Did you guys roll into Cracker Barrel with the security team? Because that would have been a pretty baller move.
We did, actually. That's 100% accurate. We did. We rolled into Cracker Barrel. We had like a group, you know, Peter Fagan, who we're close with, president of the team.
I've seen Joe Fly and Air Fagan recently. Look, he's like a regular on that thing. You talk about Adonai.
Joe and Peter have a great, great relationship. It isn't to the general public always seen as a amicable relationship. Sometimes it's like a tough love type situation, but he had some great stuff on that trip. I'm pretty sure he gave us a gift. I don't remember what it was. Remember, we were in Cracker Barrel. He went into like the merchandising store and he got like the most, I think he got an animal that had a massive head for you or something.
Yeah. Like, and then he got, I think, a pair of like salt and pepper shakers, like that were like birds for Pat. Yeah. Kind of a random, I mean, whatever you can find in the Cracker Barrel gift shop, I guess. But yeah,
which I didn't even know they had a gift shop. I'd never been to Cracker Barrel before.
It's a nice All-Star Weekend gift. What entourage character is Joe most like? Drama, turtle?
No, he's like E. He's got a business mind. He's got his shit together. Yeah, he's got a good way about him, I would say. I don't know if we got a drama or a turtle. Maybe we could put Peter as turtle.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right.
All right, let's go to the championship. What was that like, that moment?
It was incredible. I mean, I think the coolest part about the championship that you don't see from the outside is the journey of the championship, right? It's not like the Super Bowl. It's it's a 7-game series. It's there's ups, there's downs. Obviously, we made it very difficult on ourselves throughout the entire playoffs by going down 0-2 to Brooklyn, going down 0-1 to Atlanta, going down 0-2 to Phoenix. So we didn't make it easy for ourselves. But I think the cool part about it was that we were able to get over the hump, was that we were able to come together through the face of adversity, win it at home. And, you know, when the confetti starts falling, you know you won it, but you're so into it. Like that Brooklyn series felt like it was a month and a half. It was 2 weeks. Each series was roughly 2 weeks. So when you end that final game six, you're almost like, who do we have next? Like, who's next? Like, you're just so ingrained in it. And to finally kind of get to that mountaintop, to finally like do it. And again, shared experiences, right? I mean, almost the exact same group from the dunk contest was at the game six. You know, Joe was there, our buddy Joe Kerbs was there, Karate was there, my parents were there. Like, we almost had the exact same group. So to have them be able to come down on the floor afterwards, to have them be able to, Joe's still got the confetti. He sleeps with it every single night and under his pillow. Like, he's cherishing the moments as much as I am. And that's what's fun about it. And my mom, to see her, my dad had a great line, like, you take a picture with a trophy at the end of the game, like later on, a few minutes, hours after media, all that sort of stuff. And so I gave my mom the trophy to hold, and she was on cloud nine. And my dad's immediate comment was like, don't drop it, Sue. And so like, she gets really nervous, but she's happy at the same time. So to see those facial reactions from the people that have been there since day one, and to have them be able to share in those experiences, it's really what makes it. I mean, obviously, I want to have success. I want to continue to work hard. I have all these other things that I, can get better at and want to accomplish. But to have them be a part of it along the way, I think puts it in perspective.
Really quick, I just like to interject. I want to upkeep the image a little bit. I do not sleep with the confetti under the pillow, but I did take confetti from, you have to. I mean,
where is the confetti?
Yeah, where is it then?
It's in my apartment somewhere. I can't reveal
under your pillow?
No, not under the pillow, but I can't reveal the location. I mean, this is going to be broadcast to the public. I don't want anyone breaking into my apartment and stealing it.
Yeah,
that is high dollar amount. I'm sure it's the most valuable thing in the well, complex you guys live in.
You've talked about framing it, haven't you?
Yeah, I have talked about framing it. I mean, look, the last championship before that was 50 years before. So, I mean, I'm hoping we win one this year so we can go through all these, the fun championship experiences that we had.
Well, put some pressure on us. Tell Richie, you want to collect confetti from every championship. You want to be 100%. Able to just frame the stories and confetti be a like spectacle on each frame.
Right. I want the Bucks. I want Giannis and Pat to turn into Tom Brady and go, go win 7 championships and have 7 different.
What's that business mind? How much is he going to try and flip this confetti for in 20 years? Just build up the collections.
Hey, look, if he collects it, you're going to see.
Has he had you autograph a strip of confetti yet? Or
No, not yet. I will say,
I like that.
When you look at Joe, when we're on our, hopefully, I'm not LeBron, I'm not guaranteeing anything, but where we are projecting ourselves or going, the trajectory we're going, if we're on a 5th or 6th championship, Joe's going to be out there with like a snowblower, getting all the confetti, or a vacuum, I should say, sucking up all the confetti. And now he's going to start his own little confetti selling business
100%.
In 15, 20 years.
I mean, let me ask you, Richie, would you buy some if I had confetti to offer from the championship?
I'd probably lean towards other merch, I would say. Then confetti wouldn't be my first choice. Fine.
What would your first choice be?
I think part of the floor would be cool. I think the net, the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're going big.
Well, the ball, there's only one of those.
Yeah, I mean, there's thousands of pieces of confetti.
I mean, the Bucks are offering pieces of the court. They're also offering paperweights, which, mimic the same ring, the championship ring that these guys got.
Joe has one of those.
I got one of the paperweights. And,
they're massive. They're the size of your whole fist. And Joe tells everyone, no, this is a real ring. This is the size of the real
Where
ring.
Where is it? You're not wearing it now?
I wish I brought it. As a prop,
I wish you did too. I'd like to see
security,
one of these
Richie. Security. Joe doesn't walk around flashing it out. He doesn't want people to treat him differently.
He's a very humble guy, right there. Very humble guy. What was that first night like after winning? What was the party like? Where did that go on to?
It was a blast. I mean, you have such memorable moments. I think the Bobby Portis and I interview was hilarious. That obviously went viral. You got dinner afterwards. We did it at Harbor House. It was just a team. It was really fun. Families were included. I don't even know where we went afterwards. I know we were up until like 7 in the morning. I know that next day was kind of a blur. I think Joe, myself, our buddy Kerp, and Joe's wife, Erin, went to
Red, white, and blue.
Went to blue.
That's Joe's favorite spot.
No, we went to Blue Bat Taqueria.
Yeah.
Which was for a little late lunch.
Honestly, it was just like we just sat on the deck outside. We just won a championship. The next day, you see the four of us just sitting on the deck. And it's just kind of like you basking in it, right? You're just kind of, wait, was that real? Let's talk about it. Or discussions. Or people walk by, kind of like give you a double glance like, wait a minute, is that?
Yeah, there was a few. I was going to say, there was a few lucky people who happened to be getting lunch at 2:45 when we were there at Blue Bat who were like, God, is that Pat? They just won the championship like last night. I got to go up. I got to get a picture. I got to tell them congrats. Blah, blah. So we had a lot of that at lunch, which was pretty funny. But yeah, like you said, I mean, the party was crazy. And for me, as like, you know, from a fan's perspective and from, you know, being his friend, we obviously, like you said, had a good crew there. And, you know, just the whole celebration was surreal. I mean, we went from, you know, being there at the game, which is obviously the coolest part, but then it just kept getting, you know, better and better. I mean, they were like, oh yeah, you guys can come down to the floor and celebrate with the team. And so we went down and did that. And the confetti's falling. I'm scooping up confetti and filling up my pockets, as we've already discussed.
We're going to get so many messages for confetti sales after this podcast.
I know.
I'm telling you, the confetti is going to be an underrated thing. There's only a finite amount of the pieces of the floor.
Exactly.
There's only two nets. There's only, what else can you sell? There's only so many sneakers that were worn in that final game.
Exactly.
Confetti has more supply.
But so we did all that. And then, you know, they're like, all right, yeah, you know, after the celebration on the floor, hey, we can go back to, you know, go back to the locker room. And so we celebrated in the locker room, and then we went down and got to...
Yeah, you guys were in the locker room. I didn't even make it back to the locker room.
Yeah, we actually
I got pulled to media, and yeah. They're in the locker room
we
celebrating.
We celebrated by Pat's locker in the locker room. He wasn't even there, but that's...
in my honor.
Yeah, no worries. And then we ended up going down, further down the hall, took pictures with the trophy, and I mean, just like he said, went out to dinner after, up until 6 or 7 in the morning. I mean, it was a night, obviously, we'll never forget.
It was really, really tell them about the parade though. Like that's where we had probably our most fun aside from winning.
True.
Like the parade, we did our own thing.
That was probably the cherry on top. And then they say, yeah, you know, the friends and family are going to be able to come on the float or come on the bus with the guys. And we were like, oh my gosh, we get there day of the parade. We jump on the bus. We get a prime spot right in front, double decker bus. And we're riding through the street. Obviously there's hundreds of thousands of people there. And early on the parade route, like right before it started, someone tossed up a football. And they're like, we want to toss back. And like, no, keep it. And we were like, all right, sweet. This is actually perfect. So we gave the football to PC. And throughout the entire parade route, he was just throwing dimes to people in the crowd. And they were catching them and throwing it back. And it was a good back and forth with the fans.
And then what it turned into?
Yeah, then it turned into people like, hey, will you sign my jersey? And I'm standing like just behind Pat and I'm just calling for everything. Throw it all. Like, so people are throwing up jerseys, catching them. Pat's got a Sharpie. He's signing it quick. And then I'm balling it back up and throwing it to the person. It was actually a lot of pressure. You got to remember who threw you the jersey.
And yeah, it's moving. The float's like, moving. And I don't got the shortest last name. I mean, I don't got the longest last name on the team, which is obvious, but right. I don't got the shortest one either.
Right. It's tough. And then you don't want to throw it to the wrong person or, you know, have a fight ensue in the crowd. So, but no, it'll
a lot to worry about.
I know it is. High pressure.
I think Noah, trainer at F45, I don't know if you know him or not, but he was one of the crazy guys who took his jersey off and threw it at you and you signed it.
Was it successful?
Yeah.
100%. And then look, we had multiple things going. Like Joe might have started it. Our other buddy Joe was on the other side doing the exact same thing. My dad was on the other side that got a few thrown at him. So we kind of had like a few different, what I would call storefronts going on every side of the thing.
Oh, for sure.
Did you, after suffering heartbreak in Toronto a couple of years ago, then having a disappointing run in the bubble, did you ever think you were out of it in those playoffs? Did you guys think you were going to win the whole time? Do you not even think about that and just try and stay in the moment? Obviously, Durant with his foot on the line, that would have ended it. What was that mentality like?
Well, look, Richie, I was kind of hoping we were not going to talk about all of those things after we just talked about the championship. I mean, you're bringing my morale. I'm
trying
down
to take you on an emotional roller coaster throughout the podcast.
That's what we'll get to
some more positive things.
Got it. Good. I appreciate that.
But, like the party at the Lazarus that Joe was also at. So we'll get there. I just kind of wanted to put you back in that place.
I don't even know why I'm here for this podcast. Joe can answer all these things. He's at everything. I would say it's part of the process, right? So I just talked about adversity within the playoff run, going down 0-2, going down 0-1, going down 0-2 again. Like that adversity is what kind of made it even more euphoric at the end of the day, right? So you look at the adversity. Now you take it from 1 year and you expand it. This is my fourth year in Milwaukee. It was a 3-year journey to get there. And I think that's what sometimes people miss is like, you look at it over the course of a season, but what, you know, John Horst and Mark Lazar and the ownership group, Wes Edens, all them, what they're trying to build here wasn't a one-win team. They're trying to build a team that can compete for a championship for years to come. That first year was the first part of that. And I think the Toronto series, we hadn't faced much adversity. If you remember that team, we had the largest margin of victory in NBA history after that regular season. We won 60 games, and I think we lost the last few because we were getting ready for the playoffs. Like, we were in a stratosphere that was far different than what Milwaukee had faced or experienced with the Bucks in previous years. They had 15 wins at one point when Chris and Giannis were on the team, right? So I think it started there. But when you face adversity for the first time in the playoffs, I don't think we were ready to handle it the way we wanted to. And so I think going through that allowed us to bounce back in year three. Year two, obviously the bubble, I think that's an anomaly. I think a lot of that was just based on what you were dealing with. I am personally of the belief that the playoffs have their own atmosphere. The playoffs in the bubble that have no fans there don't have an atmosphere. And I think when you take into account a veteran team who's been there, who's been a part of the playoffs, who honestly is juiced for that atmosphere. And then you take into account a young team with young players who have never played in that atmosphere. That's a big part of the game. And when you're just in an empty gym, young guys don't feel that pressure. Older guys don't get up and have as much adrenaline as they do when there's 17,000 fans in the Pfizer Forum. So I do believe it was kind of an outlier. But then that third year is we don't have the best regular season. We don't do exactly what we wanted to do in the regular season as far as the first 2 years we were here. But going through that adversity in the regular season, I think prepared us for the playoff run that we had, because inevitably you're going to have adversity in the playoffs. I'm pretty sure there's never been a team in NBA history to go 16-0 and win the NBA championship. That's how many games you got to win, right? So you're going to have adversity. How you handle that, how you deal with it, the experience you have in dealing with it all plays a major role. And so I think that's what put us in a position to win. And at the end of the day, what we're trying to do as a team, one of the reasons I love playing in Milwaukee, one of the reasons I want to play in Milwaukee for a long time, is when you have a makeup of a team with a Giannis, a Chris, a Drew, with a leadership group that is so about winning, that is so not about personal attention, personal stats, all those sorts of things, you have a chance to be a championship contender for, who knows, handful of years, 10 years. What, you never really know, right? But like, that is what I think the owners and John and Coach Bud and everybody's been trying to build here in Milwaukee. And that's what makes it exciting. You may not win it every year. You got to be realistic. It's, every year is a different journey. But if you can put yourself in a position to win it every year or have a chance to win it every year, it's on then you to close it more times than not.
Well, it seems like a very sustainable team with very low drama from leadership. You just look around the NBA. I don't want to make you call anyone out on the podcast either, but you just look at what was going on in Philly and with the Nets and with the Lakers. And it's just like, those were, you know, you bring all the stars in and there's a lot of egos attached to it. And it's like, yeah, they have a ton of firepower, but do you trust them all to be healthy and play together and be able to flip a switch when the playoffs come?
Yeah. And I think, look, that's, you're right. That's not me. I don't call anybody out. Everyone teach their own, but I think that's the difference in culture. That's the difference in how do you and what do you value in players? Do you value talent? Do you think you can essentially buy a championship? Can you think you can spend all the money in the world on talent to win? And there's no right or wrong answer. I mean, it's going to play out over time. You're going to see what the right or wrong answer is. I just personally believe it's about more than talent. You can stick the five most talented players on a team. It doesn't mean they're going to win a championship. How that team fits together, how the culture of that franchise is, who is the makeup of your superstars, who's the makeup of your role players, what do they value? Like, how the fit is, it's really about talent versus team, in my opinion. Like, that's the argument, and that's what we're seeing in professional sports. That's what people are trying to come down to and figure out as they're building these franchises. Is it talent or is it team? Like, fit, culture, things like that. And I think what we're doing here in Milwaukee is more about the team than just the talent. You got to have talent, obviously. That is, you got to have a level of talent. But I think it's undervalued how they all fit together, how the team component plays into it. Because at the end of the day, there's one basketball on the floor. At the end of the day, you still got to play defense in the playoffs. Like, it's more of a half-court game. There are things that aren't going to change about the game of basketball, and especially about the game of playoff basketball.
That was very well said. Now we can move on to happier times. Joe, if you want to talk about partying with Bill Clinton or transporting the Larry O'Brien trophy from Milwaukee to PC's house
for
on
sure,
the East Coast last minute.
Yep. Oh, God. Yeah, I got a couple good stories on that. So back to the championship celebration. So we got invited. I say we. Pat got invited, and I was fortunate enough to be invited by him to the Lazarus.
That's nice of you to say. I thought even on the Blue Bat thing, you were going to say how people were really like, is that Joe Stanton? Can I get a picture
with
Joe?
My rep's not that big in Milwaukee yet. I'm hoping maybe one day.
You're gonna be the E of Milwaukee after this podcast. He was a pretty prolific figure on Entourage.
Yeah, true. I guess I'd take that. So
confetti man.
So yeah, so we get invited to this party at Lazarus. So he's got this mansion right on the water. And we show up to the party and we walk in. Again, keep in mind, I keep hitting on two kids from Arlington. We walk in and we see two Ferraris parked on the front lawn. So I was kind of the first alarm going off in my head, like, Jesus, like, where are we? This is bananas. So we walk
and
in.
As a real estate guy, Joe's very concerned, like, the lawn, like, what are we doing?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
There's gonna be a cost to fix the lawn.
100%.
Like, well, come on now, we create value.
Maybe as much as one of the tires.
Yeah,
maybe.
Exactly.
so we walk in to see that. It's crazy. I mean, the house is beautiful. We're walking around the backyard. He's got this whole, you know, catered thing put together, and the trophy's there too, just sitting there, you know, on its own table with a bunch of championship hats around it. People are going up, taking pictures. It was probably, I don't know, just like 75 people or so there. But the craziest thing, as I was walking around the party, kind of exploring the backyard and just taking it all in, I was with, my wife was there too. We were walking around and we were just like, I keep noticing like these security guys, like.
And there were rumors. Peter had rumors.
There were some rumors.
There might be some
high profile people. So when we walk in, Adam Silver was there. Obviously, you know, Pat's there. Bobby Portis was there. Coach Bud was there. So there's definitely some high profile people there. But the security seemed like, at the time when I'm walking around, seemed like such overkill. We got guys with earpieces everywhere walking all over the party. They're wearing these like nice suit coats.
And mind you, this is a guy coming from the NBA dunk contest where he had two security guys driving him around
right.
all the time.
So I know some security
experience. Yeah, 100%. Exactly.
So I'm just very impressed with this whole operation. With the security guys coming out of the bushes. I mean, there's
boats.
Guys out. Yeah, there's two boats off of the coast, just like sitting out there, like watching the party. And I'm like, wow, this is like crazy. Like, what? I don't understand this. But anyway, so the night keeps going on, and then I'm talking at a table eating some hors d'oeuvres with my wife, and all of a sudden she's facing the other way, and I'm looking right at her, and her jaw just drops, and I'm like, what? And she's like turn around and look. And I turned around, and President Bill Clinton was just showed up at the party, and people like, they were pretty good about it. They didn't swarm him, like. But anyway, he's, long story short, he's boys with Mark Lazary, and Mark had invited him to the championship party. So naturally, being, you know, the fanboy that I always am, I'm like, all right, I'll try to play it cool for right now, but I do eventually want to go over and chat with Bill and get my picture. So sure enough, Pat had already met him before, but we went over.
That's a whole nother story.
That is actually a funny story too, but I guess we can touch on that while we're on the subject. So Pat had met him before at a game in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center.
Mark and him are close. So like, they go back a long time. And so Mark will bring him to the Barclays Center from time to time. And this was my first year in Milwaukee. And so I didn't know he was coming. I mean, you see him courtside, right? But I didn't know he was coming before. And so he's at the game or whatever. And just before, I have a, you know, great relationship with Mark. It's probably my second month on the team. It wasn't that far into the regular season. And so after the game, I have my routine. You know, I do a little workout in ab circuit, get stretched, do some PT, ice the knees, and then I jump in the shower and I get ready. And I usually come out and say hi to people. Like, I got a bunch of friends from Brooklyn, Notre Dame connections. I got a bunch of people that come from Boston. It's not that far of a drive, right? So I jump in the shower pretty quickly, and I come out of the shower and I'm standing there in a towel, and Mark goes to me, hey, you want to beat President Clinton? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. He goes, all right, well, he's about to leave, so you got to do it right now. And I'm like, what do you mean? And I turn to my right, and he's standing there talking to Giannis. So Mark grabs him and pulls him over. And he was like, President, he introduces me. I'm standing there in a towel. I got nothing else on. And I'm like, Mr. President, how are you? And I'm like shaking his hand. This is obviously before I had a broken one. And I'm shaking his hand. And then Mark was like, let's get a photo. Like, let's get a picture of you guys. And I'm like, I would love it. Do you think I should put some clothes on first? And he's like, look, he's got to go. Like, get a shirt. So someone threw me my shirt, which was just this white shirt. So I'm in a white towel, a white shirt, and I'm standing there, and there's a picture of me shaking the president's hand. We're both looking at the camera, and all I'm in is a towel. Now, granted, way better than not having a shirt on as well, but it's
hilarious,
hilarious photo, because when you look at it right away, you see a shirt on me. So you don't really think a whole lot of it. But then, like, you look at the photo and you're like, are you in a towel shaking President Clinton's hand? And
when I'm he like, sent it to me, I had that exact, I was like, wait a minute, like what is going on here? So it was,
So I've met him. He's come to Milwaukee once or twice, I think. He's been in Brooklyn almost at each game that we're in Brooklyn. And so I've met him a few times. And so at the party, I'll let Joe finish the story, but at the party, you know, Mark's big thing, like Bobby had talked to him, both from Arkansas, right? So they were hitting it off there. And Mark wanted me to come over and meet him because I'm sure part of his reason for going is to be able to see some of the players because he's a basketball fan, et cetera. So I didn't see Joe and Aaron. I didn't pass by the table that they were standing at with Aaron's jaw on the grass, but I was over there like kind of shaking hands, and I see them kind of like making their way over, which was perfectly played by Joe.
Yeah. So perfect timing. So we kind of walk up,
move.
Yeah. We walk up, all
not
of
his
us
first rodeo. He's met plenty of
all of us together, and, just got him at the perfect time. And we went right up and just went right in, and I forget it. Honestly, I think I blacked out when I was meeting him. Leading up to it, I'm like, what the hell am I going to say to this guy? Like, obviously he's way, you know, so much smarter than me. So what am I possibly going to say? So I went up, just shook his hand, said, you know, it was an honor to meet him. And then basically, I think I asked him a question about the Bucks.
No, saying, you threw me under the bus for some reason, right? You said, oh, if you had made some more shots, maybe it wouldn't have been as close.
Oh, yeah. I think it was something to do with the Bucks and PC. So we got him to laugh.
Crack a joke, warm him up.
Exactly.
This guy knows what he's doing.
We had somebody ripping photos. Like, I don't know who it was. Ryan Hoover. Yeah, greatest guy ever.
Yep.
Ripping photos. So he sends me all the photos afterwards. And we took like a real photo of him as well, which Joe knew or whatnot. And we had Hoover do it. But the funniest photos are the ones where Joe's in the midst of conversation with him because he's like, as he's talking and President Clinton's like actually talking to him. And then there's one candidate of all of us laughing, and it's just really, it's priceless.
Yeah. So it was a wild, wild story that definitely, that was probably one of the best things from the championship run, maybe aside from, the trip with the Larry O.
Yeah. Can you touch on that quick when you needed the trophy to celebrate with your family at home, you get it for a couple of days and it's in Milwaukee and you're not there.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, it's a short off season, right? So it's not like the Stanley Cup. You know, I got a good buddy who I worked out with, Connor Sherry, back home, who won it with the Penguins. Might have won it twice, actually. Everyone gets a few days with a cup or a week with a cup. That's not really how the NBA trophy works, but you can like take it. You can ask for it. Like, it's just kind of like an unwritten thing. Like, if you want it, if you want to take it home, whatever, you can do it. But with a short and off season, it's a little bit harder to coordinate. And so, granted, you guys just heard all of the things we've done, and that's in the span of like a week after the finals, right? We also took a trip to Florida to take some time out. We did a bunch of stuff. But point being, I wanted at some point to bring the trophy home. Like, I wanted it to be the place where I learned how to play basketball, Fidelity House. I thought it'd be really cool to bring it there. Like, all the people and places that kind of helped me get here. One of the things I always say, and I have a chain that says family over everything, but that's not just blood relatives, right? Like, families for me, anybody who I consider to be family. And so I know I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for those people and places that helped get me here. So to be able to, again, shared experience and bring that Larry O'Brien trophy back, I know all those people their jaws will be on the floor with Aaron, right? So for me, I want to try to coordinate it. And so we finally got a way to coordinate it on Labor Day weekend. Problem is, I'm already home. And so I was talking to the trophy coordinator with the Bucks on like how to get it done, and their big thing is they don't just want to ship the Larry O'Brien trophy, right? Like, they don't necessarily want it in other people's hands to just kind of go about. In a perfect world, they send somebody with it. In this instance, the person that they had been sending with the trophy had been doing it for like a month and a half because we had won it mid of July, and now it's September, so they were going to take a few days off. Also, Joe's gotten to know people within the Bucks organization very well. And so I kind of just gave them the idea, hey, if need be, like, Joe's there, he's going to be coming home anyway for the weekend. Like, I don't know the protocol, but if you guys are comfortable with it, like, I'm sure he'd be up for it. So I called him and asked, and he goes, sure, what does that even mean? And essentially,
I get the call, and like, a little side story on that too. I get the call. I mean, it's, I don't know, probably Tuesday, like the before Labor Day weekend. And I'm like working, and I just get a random call at like middle of the afternoon. And he's like, hey, would you be comfortable bringing the Larry O'Brien trophy home to Massachusetts? Like, you got to travel with it, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what? Like, I think you're breaking up. I don't know what, like, what are you saying? And so he asked me, and I was like, I mean, obviously, of course I said yes. And I mean, the story from there is just was so absurd. We basically coordinate going to pick it up. And then I had to coordinate with the Bucks on purchasing an actual seat for the trophy. So under Larry O'Brien's name. So we get the tickets purchased, and, you know, I show up to the airport super early. I got to get it privately screened, so like by TSA. And the guys like didn't believe me when I first said, like, I'm traveling. It's in this like massive, like 100-pound, like bulletproof case. Like,
yeah. And fire resistant. Locks on the padlocks on it. Like, this is going to sound horrible. It looks like it's a bomb. It looks like it's a massive bomb. Like, Joe looks like he's wheeling around a bomb in the middle of the airport. Like, that just is what it is. Like, we didn't say that to anybody, obviously, especially not in the airport, but that's kind of what it looks like. And so handling the protocol for him was hilarious because of that exact thing.
Yeah, the amount of dirty looks I was getting. And so anyway, we get to the airport and I'm like, yeah, I got like the NBA championship trophy in this case. Like, I'm trying to whisper it to the guy, like, hey, we got to get this. You know, can I get this privately screened? I don't want to whip out the Larry O'Brien in the security line. So they're like, yeah, for sure. So they take you know me to some back room and go in there with a couple of different TSA guys. We open up the case, and literally, I'll never forget this. Open up the case, and the guy just goes, "Holy shit!" Just like that, like couldn't believe that it was actually the trophy. And so we take it out. Like, they got gloves on. They're inspecting.
Like, why would Joe lie about that? Like, what exactly could it have been?
Right.
If he wasn't the trophy.
So they look at the whole, you know, look at the case and everything. And then they ask me, like, you know, very nicely, can we take pictures with it? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So they grabbed a few pictures of their own holding the trophy in their TSA uniforms. But, so then, yeah, we end up getting through that and jump on the plane. And then I had to.
First, I got to interrupt for a second. The funniest part I saw about it, or I heard about it, I wasn't on the first trip, was once he got through security, he's walking through the airport with this thing being wheeled behind him, right? And the guy who helped him get through security gave him his card and said, hey, if you have any problems, let me know. Like, I handled it. He kind of headed up TSA. So Joe gets to the terminal to go on the plane. And the funniest part is, like, it's still a unique thing, right? Nobody expects that to ever be a thing. So when he tries to check in, the people are like, that can't go on the plane. That's gonna go underneath the plane. And Joe's like, no, this can't go underneath the plane. And Joe's like, I got a seat for it. And they're like, what? So he has like two tickets. It's him and the trophy. It's like if it was him and Aaron, but it's him and the trophy. He's got two tickets. He scans both tickets and they're still like, what's in it? Like, I don't, like, that doesn't sit right, which I don't discredit them for that. Like, that makes sense. But Joe's over here in a position where he's like, well, I don't want everybody to know what it is, because at the end of the day, once I get to Boston, everyone's going to want to take a photo with the whole plane's going to be passing around the Larry O'Brien trophy. It's going to be like Soul Plane. And so I think the funniest part to me was now he has to explain the story again to the people checking him in. They don't believe him. Finally, they let him in on the plane. Now the flight attendant doesn't believe him. She doesn't want to let him on the plane. He has to explain it to her. They move him up to first class, let the thing sit next to him in first class. Has to get a seatbelt extender because you have to strap it in. It doesn't fit in the seat, so he puts it on the ground in the seat. And now he's sitting there next to him with this case that looks somewhat like a bomb in the first seat of the plane as everybody's walking by him on the plane, like, what is going
Multiple
on here?
Multiple people stopped and are like, what is in that case? And so
I don't want to be on this plane anymore.
Yeah, so like he said, I didn't want to scare anyone. And two, I didn't want to reveal what was actually inside. So I was making up like these ridiculous, I was changing it up for every single person who asked, what's in that case? I'm like, oh, it's my trumpet. They're like, oh, what's in this case? Like, just making up all these things. And people were just like, oh, interesting. And just walk by. So we ended up successfully getting it there, but it was a hilarious story. And then I think the funniest part of all too, was once we arrive, we get off and he was supposed to pick me up actually, but he was, I don't know what he was doing. I think he was golfing or something and was running a little late. So he's like, oh, hey, I'm not gonna be able to get you. So my mom had to come and pick me up. And I'm like, hey, I'm at the airport and I have the Larry O'Brien trophy with me. Can you come pick me up? So she came and picked me up. We just tossed it in the back seat and then drove home and met Pat at my house. But it was pretty, it was a fun trip.
Yeah. And that's like, look, it was the same exact thing. On the flight back, Joe, Aaron, and myself, and I guess now you got to include the trophy because it's four people traveling according to the tickets. fly back. And like me and Aaron sit next to each other and Joe sits next to the trophy. We let him stay in charge of it because he's had experience with it. He throws on his black shades during the flight, throws his hat on low, and he's sitting there like this. He looks like a security guard with the trophy. Like he looks so serious. We got great photos of it. But like I think some of the funniest parts are like Joe's godson, his nephew. Like the Larry O'Brien trophy comes home. He was what, 3 at the time?
Yeah.
And the trophy's cool. He can see himself in it. It's whatever. He loves the box. You open up the box, it's got a cutout of the trophy. That's where you stick the trophy. And obviously it's got padding all around it. You take the trophy out, he fits in the cutout of the trophy in the box. So we take the trophy out. Everyone's like, ooh, ah, at his house. Like everyone's pumped about it, etc. My man Connor is laying in the box in the exact way the trophy is fit in the box. Like, oh my God, look at me. This is the best thing ever. So it's just funny how like things work and how much, you know, obviously people enjoyed seeing the trophy, but some people enjoyed seeing the box.
All right, we're going to end part one of the Go-Getters Joe and Pat edition right there. Thanks again to those two for coming on, and thank you for tuning in. Just a reminder, this show is brought to you by Go-Get It Marketing and Media, ggmm.io, and our friends at On Milwaukee. Please subscribe, write a review if you have not already, screenshot it, tag us on Instagram. Let us know you're listening. We'd appreciate it. That helps get more ears and eyes on this show. We'll be back with more next week.